Welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. As the creator and host of this podcast, it is critical to me to convey to you, our listeners, how much positive power you have inside of you right now, in this very moment. You have the power to change your life. And that could be changing it, like I had to back when I was 23, from a place of kind of being on a road to nowhere, kind of feeling hopeless and stuck, to being on a road to somewhere desirable, someplace good. It could also be changing your life from good to great. And it could also be changing your life from great to, I cannot believe how incredibly blessed and lucky I am to get to live this life. You have that power inside of you, and that is all you need to get started. The rest, you can learn along the way. I started this podcast as a way to bring stories of hope and triumph, as well as resources that will help you along that journey, whatever that might be, whatever your starting place is, or whatever your destination might be. My sincerest hope is that you find it valuable. So let's go. Here is this week's episode. My guest today would likely be that lone pair of headlights driving in the opposite direction during a hurricane evacuation. She is skilled at the act of listening hard for how to be a good citizen in her adopted town of Durham, North Carolina. In 2010, she started Miel Design Studio with the goal of making beautiful sense out of a complex world. Ask her what that means, but don't be surprised if the answer has something to do with trees or books or school lunch. Her name is Rebecca Miel, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
So I'm the creative director and founder of Miel Design Studio, which is a design and marketing studio in Durham, North Carolina, that works with B Corps, nonprofits, and other purpose-driven organizations. So we do everything from email marketing to exhibits to billboards to websites.
And now you have quite a story, quite a journey. So do you want to share a little bit about that with us?
Yeah. So I think one of the things is sort of why that I get asked a lot is why do we only work with purpose-driven organizations? And that really started when I first started my business, which was when I graduated from college, started this as a freelance project, but then really solidified over the course of my career, both in my experience. My husband was really sick at one point and learning about wanting to make an impact in the world. And then later on, after I had kids.
Yeah. You said you started to take it more seriously after your husband got sick.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that was stage 4 cancer, right?
Yeah. So he had stage 4 lymphoma that while he was in treatment, it relapsed, included CNS involvement, which is a fancy way of saying brain tumors. And I was very fortunate at that point. I had a manager who I worked somewhere who is now a client. But my manager was amazing, Cam. And he was like, I know that this is like your goal, like take care of him. Here's your work. And he just let me do my work. And I worked from the hospital for almost a year. I'd come in for meetings and things like that. But his level of flexibility was just unmatched. And that was such a gift. So this was when I was in-house. So having that experience and realizing that there's one way to be a manager and run a business and then a very different way to be a manager and run a business. Once I started my own business, I was like, that has to be central to what we do.
That's right. That's amazing that he was that flexible.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Now I ask, like, what would Cam do?
What would Cam do? But I love that. I mean, that I think goes to the power of having someone who has modeled that behavior.
Yeah, 100%. And not only giving me that freedom, but making sure that like I had what I needed and then like I didn't need to be in every meeting or things like that. Like decisions were made for me, things like that too. It's really helpful. Yeah.
I think sometimes we can get trapped in the, I have to be at every meeting, or I have to be involved in everything, or, you know, and sometimes we're just in that spot where maybe that's not the right thing for us right then.
And maybe not even for the work that like we really should be doing versus the work we feel like we need to be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So then it sounds like, was it the experience with your husband, with his illness? Was that what really kind of made you focus on the mission driven?
So I have always done purpose-driven work. So one of the things that I did when I was graduating, my last year in college, is when the Indian Ocean tsunami happened.
Yeah.
And I just happened to see it in the news, and I went to Meredith College and I called the school and I said, you know, is anybody doing anything about this at the school? And it happened to be that the study abroad professor, Dr. Betty Webb, was in Sri Lanka when it hit. And they said, yes, they're going to do something around the disaster relief. And so I connected with her, and a few months later, we were on a plane and we went and worked with an orphanage, a fishing village, school, and a couple of other smaller projects, and helped raise money for rebuilding the community. So that sort of having that experience, like right as I was graduating and deciding what I wanted to do, sort of solidified that, you know, there are a lot of ways that we can use, I was filming video there, ways we can use design and communication to make a difference.
That's amazing. And you said that's right when you were graduating from college.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay. So I have to ask you this. So you see that about the, I mean, because the whole world saw that, right, about the tsunami.
Yeah.
What made you say, I need to do something?
I don't know. I saw this headline that said like 100,000 people are missing. And I was like, what is this? How can it be possible that many people are missing? And I don't even know what sort of compelled me to pick up the phone and decide that was the thing. But once I had connected with Dr. Webb and things just started moving forward, it felt like it was the place I was supposed to be. So I think it was just like timing, and it, like, I don't know that I would always have taken the risk to just be like, can I do this? I mean, I don't know even if I was necessarily the right person to respond to a natural disaster. But what?
Who's the wrong person though? I mean, right? It's really like, why not? That's amazing though. And how long were you over there?
So the first time we went was 10 days, and then we went back for 2 weeks, and then they went back a third time, and I wasn't able to go the third time. But we worked on the project, I think, for a year and a half, and then it continued afterwards. The orphanage was supported, I think, through most of the kids graduating, and then there were some individual family projects that were sponsored too.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. And now, you've done other types of like efforts like that, right?
Yeah. So I say that philanthropy is a weird hobby that I have.
It's a good hobby.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I, you know, I've found that I'm in a space where I have privilege and access to say, hey, here's this thing that I see in our community, or if it's disaster relief. Or one example is I did a school lunch debt pay down in our city. Do you know what lunch debt is?
No.
Yeah. So it's this concept. It isn't a concept. It is a thing that exists where some schools, not all schools, have free and reduced lunch available to everybody. So if you have reduced lunch or given lunch and can't pay for it, you get what's called lunch debt. And then that can accrue on a student's account. And then there's a certain point where they're like, the school won't give them lunch anymore. And in some cases, in extreme cases, they won't be able to do like extracurricular activities or graduate.
Oh my God. Over lunches.
Over lunches. Yeah. So I found out in Durham County, we had like in the start of a school year, this was around Thanksgiving. So November. So from September to November, there was about $150,000 in lunch debt. So I started a community campaign, and I anonymously just started paying off, not picking a certain school, but just paying off across the district so that kids could have access to lunch. It's also the way school lunch works inside of a system is complicated as well. And it can make it difficult for the schools to provide lunch. So paying down that debt is important for that system as well. So
yeah,
I think over the course of a few months, we raised close to $80,000.
That's amazing. I'm fascinated by this. So how did you go about raising the money?
So I always, my first step is to go to, part of the reason why I flew to Sri Lanka is like, I could have been here and said, you know, they need blankets. And then I go to Sri Lanka and it's 100 degrees. It's a tropical island.
They don't need blankets.
So yeah. The reason why I went was to go and say, what do you actually need? Like, do you need workforce development? Do you want to build a co-op? Like, what is the piece of the puzzle that is not getting addressed by big NGOs? So the same thing happened with the school lunch debt pay down, where I went directly to the school, to the food nutrition services, I think, and said, how should this work? How can we do this? What's the most impactful and equitable way to get this paid down? And he gave me a system. And then I just started sharing it on social media. It was around Thanksgiving, so it was a good time to have like a food related feel good story. So it got picked up by a couple of news channels. And then I started sharing it in my like parent community. And then it went across schools and it just built from there. And I also, one of the really key elements was I started connecting small businesses as well. And so I think there were 50 local small businesses that contributed to the pay down as well.
So that's amazing. I mean, what's going through my mind is so many times we hear of something happening or we hear of a need. And I think a lot of people want to do something, but I think there's that I'm unsure what to do and I'm unsure how to make a difference. And that doesn't seem to stop you. Which is great.
For better or worse, it doesn't. I mean, I've definitely learned sometimes I either take on too big of a piece or I overstep my boundary of like how I should be helping, but I'm always open to learning in that process. But yeah, I joke around with my husband that whenever I say like, hey, I have an idea, he's like, okay, what are we doing?
Like, oh no, buckle up.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome though. And now, okay. So I also know you wrote something about, you know, sweating through a Tyvek. Is it Tyvek suit? Is that
his Tyvek suit? Yeah.
Yeah. In the lower ninth. So tell me a little bit about that.
After I went to Sri Lanka, there were unfortunately many natural disasters that happened. So it was the same year that Katrina happened in New Orleans. So I ended up in New Orleans, close to New Orleans, the day the levees broke, and I wasn't able to stay that day. But I went back later on and worked in the ninth ward to help clean up houses. There was so much. I mean, this was spring. So like 9 months later, the black mold and just stuff that had been sitting there. We cleaned out a convenience store that still had everything in it from when the hurricane hit, because a lot of people still hadn't been able to come back. So volunteered down there for a little bit in a Tyvek suit.
Oh my God. That had to be just unreal. Just the debris and, you know, everything, the humanity. I've been to New Orleans a couple of times, like for work. I can't imagine wearing a Tyvek suit doing anything.
Yeah, it was definitely very warm and very fragrant in some of the places, like in the convenience store. There was like food in there and stuff like that still too.
That had to just be unbelievable. So, all right. So tell me more about your agency and some of the work that you do.
So we right now have been focusing a lot on regenerative ag and also working with nonprofits who are focused on gender-based issues. So whether that's like trafficking or gender-based violence, some of the organizations that we work with are like Save the Children. One of our local clients is Leaf and Limb, and they are formerly a tree removal company, and now they do tree care and preservation. So they stopped cutting down trees, and now they just care for trees, which was a big change for them. And the work that we do for clients varies based on the need, but it's often like trying to take either difficult idea or report or a new idea folks aren't totally familiar with, like school lunch debt, and reframing how that's communicated about, trying to make it accessible to the broader public, and also make sure that we are authentically representing that client through all of our work too.
That has to be kind of challenging because you're trying to, like, I would assume, kind of shed a spotlight on things and educate all at the same time.
Yeah, it is a challenge because I feel like sometimes we are, like, the learning curve for us is steep because We aren't just looking at a client and picking out colors and fonts and just going surface level. We really want to know our clients. So we're often trying to become subject matter experts as much as we can in the time frame that we have. So we're reading books, like going through their technical reports, really digesting the information so that we can sort of catalyze it into something else. So for example, regenerative agriculture, I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out, like, what does that mean to consumers? What does that mean to farmers? What does it mean to communities, universities? Because it's a newer concept.
What is regenerative ag?
So the short version of it is thinking about inputs and outputs in agriculture. So instead of using insecticides and pesticides, starting with soil health, so trying to build the health of soil instead of putting chemicals in. And then the output is, it's because inorganic, they can also use some amount of chemicals, and really trying to mimic what is happening in nature. So using cover crops and cycling and like the way you would see things grow in the forest or out in the field, changing practices that way. So it's instead of being extractive, it's regenerative. Instead of taking out, it's putting back.
The reason I'm smiling as you're talking there, I love that, is my dad's 89 now. And he, well before anyone was talking about organic gardening, because I grew up on a farm, a small farm in Southwest Missouri, my dad believed in organic gardening. And it's kind of what you're talking about, like our garden. I don't know if you've ever been to Southwest Missouri, but the soil's rocky and it's a lot of red clay. And when we first moved there, it was in 1978. Everyone's like, my dad's name's Bob. And they're like, Bob, you can't have a garden here. And dad's like, yeah, you can. You just got to treat the soil right. Mm-hmm. And so we started doing things like, you know, you put, like we raised rabbits, and rabbit manure is really good for soil. It's very, very healthy. And we'd put leaves in, you know, we'd let the leaves decompose. And all the stuff, we fed the soil. That's what we did. You know, and in a few years, Rebecca, like the soil was, it broke apart nice, and it was black. It was black. So the way, you know, that you think about it, and he's still really proud of that. We'd have people, if they were driving by when we were plowing the field, the garden, and it was a large garden. It wasn't the whole field, but they'd stop and they'd say, where did you buy that dirt? We're like, we didn't buy it. We made it. You know, but I always thought it was interesting the way he said, we have to feed the soil, you know, because nothing happens. And we did the crop rotation, because I remember he had always talked about, you know, like corn gives the soil, corn extracts something, but it also gives something else back. And I think peas does the opposite or something. I don't remember it all now, but it was this whole, like, he had it down to like this, I want to say a science, but this is what he did, you know?
And
I love that notion though. That's really cool.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about having a studio that's so broad and we work with so many different clients. Like, I don't know if 10 years ago I would have thought about soil at all. Like, soil was dirt, dirt was soil. It was just something that existed outside. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like this idea of regeneration is even something that we think about as not just giving back to the soil, making healthy soil, but it's one of our values as a studio too. Like, how can we create regenerative work and how can we create a regenerative environment where folks are supported instead of extracted from?
Yeah. Well, that kind of, to me, leads back to what you said earlier with Cam, right?
Yeah.
Like how he gave to you, you know, it's like, that seemed, you know, generative and regenerative as well.
Yeah, 100%. And that was one of the things I was thinking of as I started hiring and building the studio. I really thought about, what did I need then that I want to be able to give my employees as well? And also, I said too, one of the turning points was when I had twins.
Yeah.
They're not 10. And thinking about, like, what do I need as a parent? Like, how can work exist in a way that is purposeful and feels like it has meaning, but also is balanced and regenerative as well? So that started with the experience with my husband, but then through raising kids. And now in the studio, we have things like a 4-day work week and unlimited PTO. If you have to take care of something, the goal is to get good work done for our clients, but taking care of our employees is just as important.
Okay. So I'm sure that there might be some managers or leaders who would hear unlimited PTO and immediately think, oh, people are going to take advantage of that. Has it ever been a problem?
No, it hasn't been a problem. I do have some guardrails because we're a small team right now. So I have, you know, right now we're consistently four. So no more than two of us can take off at any given time. And if it's like an extended period of time, we need 2 weeks in advance, and you can't take off more than, I think, 3 weeks at a time. Wow. Maybe 2 weeks.
That's a lot, though.
But if it's enough time ahead, I can plan for it and we can mix in contractors and things like that. And I think that, you know, we've just been tracking hours right now. It's a bit of an experiment, but honestly, I don't have anybody taking advantage of it. It's the opposite. I have to tell people, like, you need to at least take a week off by the end of the year.
It's amazing, though. I think that people, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, but I think when we trust people, I think a lot of times that trust is returned. Not there's always going to be the exceptions, right? There's always going to be the exceptions, but, you know, I'm glad that's working well.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think it's showing that trust and also knowing, like, as a team, we still have to do work to be sustainable as a business. I think that there's that balance between the things of, like, knowing that you can choose to take off time whenever you want and also still wanting to do good work.
I have a friend of mine, and he was a guest on the podcast. He has a wonderful pizzeria and brewery in Chicago. His name's Bill Jacobs, and it's been in business now for more than 20 years. He still has some of his original employees. That's unheard of, right? I mean, and I asked him, I'm like, how in the world? And he's like, when you create something that brings people together, like, and there's a purpose behind it that they can get behind, and then you treat them well, like, a lot of people don't want to leave it. So what else have you done in terms of creating that, you know, the regenerative environment?
So I think also thinking about being mindful of, sometimes we take on some really intense subject matter. So being mindful of, like, how is everyone on the team responding to that and thinking about what the content is available and sort of mixing up that content. So sometimes we're talking about trafficking, and sometimes we're talking about trees. Like, there's a balance of the two. So doing work that is important and difficult, but also making sure that we have a balance internally as well.
Yeah. Cause I imagine that could get kind of heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there were definitely times when I was doing this without employees that I just had like too much without a break and recognized that that isn't sustainable. I mean, that will lead to burnout, and that's one of the things I don't want to have happen.
No, I had a guest. It was early on in the podcast. Her name's Melissa, and she's based out of Oklahoma, and it's the human trafficking. She has an organization that fights that. And I was stunned. Like, there was so much I didn't know that was happening throughout this country. I mean, it was just mind-boggling. So I could completely understand how that would get pretty intense.
Yeah. And the last few years have been hard for everyone. And I think just being mindful that not only putting clients as priority first, but also meeting our employees where they are and just checking in and seeing what they need and how I can support them, or like what other tools they need to be supported to.
Yeah, that's important. And just the care that you're putting into that goes a long way. People want to know that they're being cared for.
Yeah. Although I will say it is a work in progress. I feel like there's always more and more to learn as a manager every single day.
It's not a static place to be.
No, not at all.
And then once you finally think, okay, I've kind of got this figured out for myself, things change. Okay, that was a nice surprise. So, all right. So a couple of questions I want to ask you about. In your bio, you said that you are that lone pair of headlights driving in the opposite direction during a hurricane evacuation. So I think I know what you're alluding to, but tell me more about that.
So that was during Hurricane Katrina. We knew that there was a hurricane evacuation, and the hurricane had already hit, but people were still not going down to Biloxi in New Orleans. And a lot of people were leaving because of the damage that was caused. And I drove down there with some supplies. And that was one of those times where I was like, I am so in over my head, because there like wasn't gas. There was nowhere to stay. I was not like, I didn't have a chainsaw. But I think it was also important for me to witness that, because I don't know that I would have understood it in the same way. But part of my, you know, with my husband's diagnosis and some other things I've experienced personally, like the moment that I have such compassion for is that first moment where you realize, like, you're at day one, you're like, everything has changed in my life and I don't know where to start. And being able to with like the least amount of red tape and restrictions, help somebody like find a meal or find a place to stay in that moment, or just know that somebody's listening to them or cares, has been sort of my driver for all of that.
That's amazing. It really sounds like just like you're leading with your heart there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And I love that, because I always think that's such an important, I get accused of that a lot. And I think it's, you know, I think it's a good thing. Sometimes we can find ourselves in some hot water because of it. But that's another story for another podcast episode. Right. All right. So I also wanted to ask you this. So you opened your design studio in 2010, and you said with the goal of making beautiful sense out of a complex world, which I love that phrase. So can you tell me a little bit more about it?
So that was going back to the thing I said about, you know, trying to take these complex or seemingly uninteresting ideas. Like we talked before about previously, I didn't care about soil or dirt. So how can I do one thing to get somebody outside and know one species of tree in their backyard, or pay attention to the dirt in their garden, or pay attention to which kind of butterfly that is they see, or look, you know, in their, even like the lunch system in their community differently. So taking this idea of complex, or I think they're all interesting, but maybe not as hot topic issues, and using design and language and comms and strategy to sort of build these really beautiful systems that then people pause and think, oh, I want to know more about that, or I want to learn more about this thing. And that can take many forms. So sometimes it's a website, sometimes it's an exhibit, but trying to figure out who the audience is and what the client is trying to convey, and be that sort of that middle piece in the process.
I love that. And what do you think when you help kind of raise it, when you were painting a picture there, you know, notice the soil, notice the butterfly, note and wonder like what kind of butterfly or what kind of tree is that? What do you think that the benefit to the world is when we're more in tune, or when we notice more of those things?
I think it's a couple of things. I think it means that we're all a bit more connected and care about our community when we see a different thing. There's this idea in, I forget what they call it, I think it's like the green wall or something. Like when you go outside and if you're hiking, everything just looks green. But then once you're like, oh, that's an oak tree, or you start noticing things differently, then you get more details and you feel more connected to what's in your community or what's in your backyard or who you're working with. Because it's easy to just be busy and pass by things. So I think it sort of breaks that noise.
I know what you're talking about there. When we start to see the details, it just doesn't become this wall of stuff around us.
Yeah.
And then I think it spills over into other areas.
Yeah.
Of our lives. So I love that. I don't know why this occurred to me. Years ago when I was in college, well, I didn't like biology. So another option was like outdoor biology or something like that. And we got to go on all these excursions, but we learned about trees and weeds and all this kind of stuff. And at one point, when I lived in Illinois, I could identify, you know, not just, oh, that's an oak tree, but I could tell you which type of oak tree it was, what type of maple tree it was. I mean, it was like, oh, that's this kind of weed, whatever. And I think I drove people crazy, because then when I was outside, I'm like, oh my God, that's XYZ. And people are like, it's a weed. I'm like, no, it's not. But it just brought so much more like energy and joy to me, probably annoyance to those around me. But it wasn't just a weed. It was a story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it was a whole thing. So that's where my mind went briefly, Rebecca. I'm sorry.
That makes sense. I think it's a story. And I think it's also, so when I originally went to school, I was going to go to school for entomology to study bugs.
Really?
Because I think there's these like design patterns. Like I think insects have so much solved in terms of their systems and how they manage things. And I was really fascinated at seeing like, how do they build things out of nature? Like, how can we look at the patterns and communities that they have? I didn't end up pursuing it because the school that I went to, I realized it was more about like pest management than being fascinated by them.
Kind of the opposite.
Yeah. But I do think they tell stories and patterns, and there's like a whole lot there as well. So that makes sense.
Oh my God, that's awesome. That would have been kind of a shock. Like, no, that's not what I want to study at all. You got there. Wow, this has been great. I love it. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think that really covers it. I mean, I think the one thing that I really wanted to talk about, which we did, was, you know, sort of rethinking how businesses can operate, especially in the design world, which is often deadline driven, and thinking more about, you know, putting employees first and finding a new way to be creative and regenerative.
Yeah. And to kind of pay attention to the current environment and how that's changing and what do people need now?
Right.
Because it's different. It's very, very different.
Yeah, it is very different. Even in the last, I would say, 6 months, it all keeps changing.
Yeah. And then we have the hybrid models for some, and you know, but it's finding out what people need and then how can we best support them in that?
Exactly. So yeah.
And I also want to give you an opportunity. Where can people find more about what you do? How can people connect with you?
So if you Google us, it's Miel Design Studio. And if anybody wants to send an email, I'm always happy to talk about philanthropy or design or running a business or even bugs. You can just send an email. Email to hello@mieldesignstudio.com.
Perfect. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I was really inspired by how Rebecca listens to what her heart tells her about when to get involved, even if she's not sure exactly what that could look like. I think that that is often a stumbling block that keeps us from doing as much as we might be able to do. Two other things really stood out for me. And that one of them was about the conversation that we had about regeneration. And I know that we were talking about the soil, but if you take a step back from that for a moment and think of it as a metaphor. And to me, that metaphor, what we are really talking about is taking care and giving back to the things and the people that provide us support, care, and nourishment, which, side note, as a former farm girl, that is what the soil is. It gives us food, it gives us nourishment, and it gives us something to stand upon. But as I was thinking about the soil metaphor, I was thinking, how well do we do at giving to and adding to those things and people and communities that provide for us? And then finally, how much do we all really see just the wall around us? And whether that's a wall of trees, the wall of people at the mall, the wall of cars on the highway, you know, et cetera, versus really seeing the individual tree, you know, really seeing the individuals at the mall or the individuals in the cars. Each one has a different story, and we all have stories. Everyone is going through something. And maybe, just maybe, if we started noticing that more, we could find more common ground, or at the very least, maybe more understanding and connection. So that wraps up today's episode. As always, thank you so much for tuning in and for listening. And if you know of someone that you think has an interesting story, I hope that you'd connect us, because I'm always looking for those good stories about everyday people who are just making a difference in their part of the world. I think we need to hear more of that. So if you know someone, please connect us. And I hope you have a great week, and I hope that you look for how you can thrive no matter what.